Man, I am glad everyone is here, and I am glad to be here. This morning I had the opportunity, which I really like doing. I like getting a chance to speak at other places. It's always fun to do. And I was at a little church, and I mean a little church, out in, what was the name of that town? Beaumont, Mississippi, in Perry County. Sorry, I don't know. Anyways, and very sweet people, and I enjoyed it. And they had an old school potluck after, which is always nice. But it was one of those things where I was kind of standing up in front of everyone. And I definitely knew I wasn't home. Now, partly I was wearing a tie. That didn't help. But I don't really feel like God can quite speak through you if you got a tie on. I feel like it restricts the spirit somehow. But as nice as everyone was in the room, they just weren't my kind of weird. And so I always leave those places. Happy to have been there for a time, but glad to come back home. It's like going to Thanksgiving at like someone else's house, and you may sit around the table and go, "Oh, the food's good, and these people are nice, but it ain't Mama's turkey," kind of thing. Like, you know, this not that same thing. I just called y'all's Mama's turkey, and I don't know what that means, but that's my new term of affection for you guys. Y'all are Mama's turkey. In case you thought it wasn't Southern enough in here. All right, let's talk about the Bible or something. So, Normally we go through the lectionary passages here, which means that we kind of tackle a different set of verses each week. Same verses that people are really engaging with all over the world in different denominations and things. And we'd been running into week after week where I was like, man, there's so much in these verses. We're not really going to be able to do them justice, but you know, we'll just do what we can this week. And then 2 weeks ago, the last time I was here, I wasn't here last week. We were in Matthew 11, and the verses to me were just so compelling and so interesting. And I thought, but there's just, we can't get through all this in 1 week. And so I said, let's split it up. And then I was gone for a week at the Wild Goose Festival, which was a whole other set of stories we'll talk about at some point. Yeah, it was fun. But anyways, so basically we broke it up into two parts and then broke those two parts off into 3 weeks, which really makes it a horrible series because you guys probably have no idea or don't remember anything from the last time we talked about this. But we're in Matthew 11 again, and I really believe there's some, I just love what's in the scripture. So let's rewind a little bit and review just for a moment. Again, we're in Matthew 11, verses 16 through 18, and then 25 through 30 was the lectionary passage a couple weeks ago. The first part says this is what we talked about last time. It says, "To what can I compare this generation? They are like children sitting in the marketplaces and calling out to others, 'We played the pipe for you and you did not dance. We sang a dirge and you did not mourn.' For John came neither eating nor drinking, and they said, 'He has a demon.' The Son of Man came eating and drinking, and they say, 'He's a glutton and a drunkard, a friend of tax collectors and sinners.' But wisdom is proven right by her deeds." And so we talked a little bit about, I think you could probably put an umbrella over this whole section that it's about wisdom. It's about more than that, but about wisdom. And we kind of talked about that first section kind of being what wisdom is not. Right, and so there's these examples of what the world is like, as opposed to kind of really possessing this true wisdom. So they're like these children that are calling out to one another. We played the pipe for you, you did not dance. We sang a dirge, you did not mourn. And we talked about the wise and learned of this world, which he gets into, Matthew gets into, or Jesus gets into later on here, and how they miss this thing, and they're like these children who are calling this out. So we thought we'd unpack that a little bit. What does that mean? How do we miss the song? What does that look like? And so we kind of wondered out loud, does it mean they're completely deaf, right? We just don't hear anything. And so there's a beat playing and there's music playing, but I'm not doing anything, which was actually a lot like what happened at Wild Goose. If you were there, they have what's called the silent disco every night, which is amazing, and we need to do that more often. Guys, I'm going to go ahead and say this. I know this is going to sound a little too charismatic for some of y'all. We need to dance more as a group because that was awesome. And so what they do is, it didn't start till like midnight, and it was like 1,000 degrees outside, and they had a DJ that was playing, but everyone, when you walked the front door, you got a set of headphones, and you could only hear the music over the headphones. So everyone that had headphones on is just dancing like crazy. But like when I stopped at one point, I was like, I gotta use the bathroom. So you have to hand back your headphones before you get out of range. I handed it back, so I'll be right back. And then you're walking away, and you look, turn around and look, and just a bunch of maniacs just dancing. And you can't, there's no tune. You can't hear anything. And as I'm walking away, I had this great moment where I'm like, that just looks funny. And I know I'm one of those, I'll be one of those people again in a couple minutes. But, and I'm walking away. As I'm walking away, you can kind of hear feet hitting the ground a little bit. And then you hear, whoop, there it is. Whoop, there it is. Like totally off key. Like, and you're like, because people involuntarily sing parts of these songs. I think we've got good video footage of Bohemian Rhapsody from someone, which I'm sure sounds awesome without the headphones on. But, and maybe it's that. Maybe it's the person outside the silent disco, right? And there's a song that everyone's dancing to, and they just can't hear anything. It's too bad I didn't do that before last. I could have used that last time, that image, right? But and maybe it's that. Or maybe they're kind of flipping the script. Maybe they're hearing the wrong tune at the wrong time. Maybe when they're playing the party song, everyone's acting like it's a funeral. And maybe when it's a funeral dirge, everyone's dancing like it's a party. Right, so maybe that's the way they're mishearing it, and the text isn't real clear, but that's kind of a compelling image too, right? This idea that we, what we consider wise in this world, is actually dancing when they should be doing a funeral dirge, right? And I think I shared a story about during the attack and our original attack in Iraq, and having all these kind of theological opinions on it, and being kind of against it on one level theologically, but then also, if I'm honest, kind of celebrating when I was watching what was happening on TV, because I felt kind of cool to be an American who had that much power and all those great things happening, and then all of a sudden kind of realizing that, hey, I'm kind of dancing at a funeral dirge here. Like, this is war. There's people underneath those bombs. And just that kind of thing where what we consider to be wisdom a lot of times is not hearing the right notes, right? And so we talked about that. And then we also talked about wisdom being that the world's wisdom, what we consider to be wise sometimes, the world is basically just being able to kind of manipulate things around what you already think or already want, and therefore just constantly shifting what the values are, right? Which is what Jesus complains about here. You know, John comes neither eating nor drinking, and you're like, that guy's got a demon. Can you believe he doesn't eat or drink? He's out there in the wilderness. He's got, you know, camel's hair and eating locusts, which is a pretty good argument for being a demoniac, honestly. But still, he's not eating or drinking. That guy's got a demon. And then Jesus comes, and he goes to every party, and he's eating and drinking, and he's making more wine at the party, right, out of water. And they're like, can you believe this drunkard? Can you believe this guy? You know, and it's like, well, wait, which is it? You don't get to change your definitions all the time, right? But so much of what we consider, the people I think, man, the smartest people I know are the ones that kind of pick a position and then they can just manipulate the entire world around it to get it to fit what they want, right? And that's what we call wisdom. And so those are kind of compelling images there, and this idea of what wisdom is not. And I really love those verses, but I want them to kind of stand on their own. And then Jesus moves into, away from this maybe what wisdom is not, and begins to talk a little bit about how I think it's about how the kingdom of God works, but how maybe the wisdom of God in particular works in this world. And Jesus says this. There's so much to do with these passages. Again, we won't do them justice, but let's kind of look at them a little bit. At that time, Jesus said, I praise you, Father, Lord of heaven and earth, because you have hidden these things from the wise and the learned, and you've revealed them to the little children. So you've hidden them from the wise and learned, and you've revealed them to little children. Yes, Father, for this is what you were pleased to do. So God has hidden these things from the wise and learned and revealed them to children. So kind of a strange little saying that you know, God's wisdom is kind of so turned upside down that those who are supposed to have it don't have it, and those who shouldn't have it do have it. Which is very indicative of everything that Jesus seems to do, right? He kind of flips everything on its head, this upside down kind of kingdom idea. So Jesus reveals something about the nature of true wisdom. Like many things with Jesus, it's important to kind of understand our terms and think about his context here and what he's talking about. It's hidden from the learned and revealed to the children. There's a lot of things you can do with that, but I think, in other words, I think what's really being said here is wisdom is not arrived at in the typical way. It's not wisdom like we think about it. It's not wisdom that we achieve by the normal means that we achieve it. It's not the typical framework. It's a different kind of thing. Typically, if you think about wisdom, knowledge, we achieve that through mastery. We overpower it. We kind of wrestle something to the ground. We pin it down. We understand it like we overpower it, right? That's kind of how we come to wisdom. We exert authority over a subject or idea. We master it. And then there's children, right? And this is not how it works for children. They don't have that capacity. Learning is all coming through vulnerability and humility and experience. They are those who are not able to exert authority really over anything. They're just kind of vulnerable and experience it. And there's this kind of, I think this is at least part of what's being talked about here, is this idea that wisdom of God works one way and not the other. The wisdom of Christ is kept from those who would try to achieve it in the typical means. This wisdom that has kept us, this wisdom of Christ that keeps us from missing the songs, from shifting the values, can only be found through humility and vulnerability, like a child. We don't get to overpower it. We don't get to wrestle it down. We don't get to pin it down. We don't get to master it. To do that, to go after it that way, is by nature to miss it. And so here's what I mean. So I was trying to think of what an example of this would be. In seminary, this is a huge temptation in seminary, I'll get to in a second. But so there was one time we had a class in seminary and they wanted us to listen to this lecture that someone else had done like, you know, 20 years before. So it wasn't even a live lecture. And they were talking about the importance of silence in the Christian tradition, the importance of silence in regards to prayer and those kind of things. You know, it's a really cool idea. I'm kind of excited to hear about it. And then we sat through a 90-minute lecture on silence. And there was very, I mean, it was good and all, don't get me wrong. But you kind of, you laugh at it because in some sense you realize that to approach the subject in that way is to mean you don't actually get to achieve that subject, right? You can't talk your way into understanding silence. Silence is something you got to be open to, vulnerable to, you got to sit through, you got to experience it, right? And that kind of was indicative of, to me, what was a real risk for me, even in the entire seminary kind of experience. Now, my seminary degree the degree I have was 97 or 96 postgraduate hours. It's a lot of hours, like going to undergrad all over again, basically. Yeah, when I found out other people could get master's degrees in like 12 hours, I was like, what? How did, jeez. And don't hear me wrong. I believe in studying. I believe in loving God with your mind. I believe if you're going to be a minister or going to make it a vocation of yours, I believe you should go to seminary. I really do think you should run that gauntlet for sure. But at one point I realized that I was studying to receive a degree that was called a Master's of Divinity. As of right now, you should know, I am a Master of Divinity. I don't know why. Was that funny? Those of you that know me, I feel a little personally offended by that. Right, but that's the most absurd. I mean, why can't we? In fact, when people ask me what degree I have, I usually tell them I have a Master's in Theology, which is technically a lie. Because Master of Divinity is the stupidest title I've ever heard in my entire life. I hate it. I don't know what people think. I can read their palms. I don't know what people think is going to happen next. It's just the most absurd thing ever, right? But there are points during my studies, for sure, and since, where I began to believe that I was achieving that degree, right? If I wasn't careful, I might start to believe in that degree title a little bit. As soon as it got to where I began to feel like I was beginning to master God somehow, right? I was studying enough. I was learning these things. I was understanding this stuff for the first time. And suddenly God was starting to kind of come into a really clear picture, and I was starting to build a nice little framework for God to fit in. At that point was the moment I started missing it, right? As soon as God was something to maybe master intellectually, in that moment I'm missing it. And very often, we would be at a point where I was too busy mastering God to love God or follow God or be humbly vulnerable before God to open myself up to what God was doing. I was just too busy mastering it. And it's not for me to judge other people's paths. I would say this is the kernel of why a lot of my friends, by the time they finished their degree, didn't want anything to do with church or God or anything else, right? If you come from a small town, you're going to go to seminary, people will say, be careful, seminary, don't ruin you. And you laugh at people like that because, oh, that's so ignorant. But there's a little bit of truth to that. There's a little bit of truth to that, right? Ultimately, I had to ask if I was going to be something. Again, I believe in studying. I love studying. I love reading. But I had to ask if I was going to be someone who's in a library all day trying to master God or someone who's going to humbly be open to being mastered by God. Being a child before God instead of trying to be the parent to God, right? If your wisdom is only arrived at by mastery and not vulnerability and humility, then it's a good chance it's not God's wisdom. God's truth is the kind that is hidden from the learned and understood by the child. That's kind of a squishy idea. And it's kind of hard. It's kind of like nailing Jell-O to the tree. I'm not quite sure how to give you something to really hang on to in that. But just let that sit for what it is. I've been kind of chewing on it for a couple weeks now. How do we learn the wisdom of God as children? Goes on to say this, verse 27. Feels kind of like a turn, but I think this is important. All things have been committed to me by my Father. No one knows the Son except the Father, and no one knows the Father except the Son, and those whom the Son chooses those to whom the Son chooses to reveal him. So then Jesus launches into what feels like a pretty, well, it is. It's these exclusive kind of claims about his position in regards to God. Now, these verses right here and the last verses I've always kind of heard separated out from everything else. And sometimes these verses have been kind of weaponized. But let's not pretend like Jesus doesn't make some pretty exclusive claims here, although let's wrestle with this text a little bit. I don't think this is here. In fact, I can't imagine how it could possibly be here, especially given what was just said right before it. I don't think this is here so that we get to look, play judge to others. Right? These exclusive claims that Jesus are making here, I don't think the point is that then I get to go out in the world and decide who's God's and who's not God's, right? The larger point is to clarify, to me, I believe, is to clarify that this humble, childlike, vulnerable, cross-bearing image of God is not just one facet. It's not just one path of many. This humility, this grace, this love is the only thing. It is the way. Right? Be suspect of anything or anyone that claims God but looks nothing like Jesus. This is more of a pressing concern for us than playing judge and jury for others. Right? God's got that job covered. Whenever you feel that temptation, like you're supposed to make a determination on someone else's standing before God, just trust God with that. Maybe that's not our job. Maybe this is here to let us know that we shouldn't be fooled by any un-Christ-like claims on the Father. Right? And this is incredibly important in a world whose history has claimed God for all kinds of horrific things. People have blamed God for their greed, their power grabs, their violence, their ego, their hatred. This very verse has been used as a weapon against people, as a way to hurt and burden people without actually helping them. In fact, that's more often what I've heard it used as. It's more often used as a weapon against those who haven't said yes to our creeds, right? This is more about, every time I heard this verse talked about when I was a kid, it was about how bad the news was for the kid in some tribe in Papua New Guinea who, you know, no white Christian missionaries had ever visited yet. It's all about kind of the bad news of that. It's made into a very heavy weight for people. Bad news for those who use, it's bad news for those and not for those who use Jesus' name to justify pride, power, arrogance, which is really more our concern. There's a lot more we could dig into with that. But I will say this, whatever that point of that is, it's not going to undo the childlike thing that comes before it, and it's certainly not going to undo what comes next. So if we use those verses to bear people, to weigh people down, then it doesn't make much sense that he says this next. Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart. You will find rest for your souls. My yoke is easy and my burden is light. My yoke is easy, my burden is light. This God will give us rest. When all is said and done, all that we've been talking about in these 2 weeks going through this leads to this idea. When all is said and done, all this is meant to be a relief to your weary soul. All this is said as an alternative to the weighty ways we live our lives. Now, what this does not say, and it's important to realize, it does not say that we go through life with no burden and no yoke. We don't get that option in this world. Not only that, but Jesus pretty specifically says, pick up your cross and follow me, right? There's a burden to bear. That's definitely not nothing. A cross is definitely not nothing. That's the most profound theological point you're hearing tonight. A cross is not nothing. It's not that we get to go through life with no burden or no yoke whatsoever. A burden-free life does not exist and never will exist. But we must always remember, as we consider all these things, that the nature of God is gentleness and humility. This God offers the kind of burden we can bear in this world. The kind of burden that leads to contentment, to grace, to love, to purpose. The kind of burden that gives us meaning. It's the kind of weight, at the end of the day, I want to carry. Solve this mystery for those of you who don't know it. Being a parent is a burden. It's not free of cost. It's not free of weight. Both literally for like the first couple years, like I feel like my biceps should be this big from holding that kid, and it's not. It's, I don't know. It's my burden to bear. Being a parent is a burden, but it is my favorite burden I've ever had. It's a burden. It's not free of weight, nor is it free of, thankfully, it's not free of weight, but it's also not free of meaning. It's not free of grace. It's not free of love. It's not free of purpose. It is a weight, but it is a great weight. It's experienced through vulnerability. It's experienced through humility. It gives me the kind of weight I want to carry in this world. God offers that burden, that yoke. May not be parenthood for you. I don't know what your situation is, but that is the burden we carry in this world. God offers us a place of rest. And now rest does not mean, this is something we get confused a lot, rest does not mean a lack of doing anything. It doesn't mean that there's nothing on the agenda whatsoever. Not that that's not nice every once in a while, but if you're anything like me, I misunderstand and think rest is going to come if I just don't have any responsibility whatsoever. And then I get about 12 hours into that and I dislike myself and the entire world. Like, it's not real rest. If I have no place to be and nothing to do, it's not all that freeing for very long. I don't know about you. Maybe it's just me. It ends up being a pretty heavy burden, which is weird to say. But I think you can look around the world and say that that's true. I get sorry and depressed quickly when I'm in that place. For me, I found that rest has more to do with meaning than a lack of something to do. Pointless work, meaningless work, will wear me out. I would only want to get out of bed when that's what's coming that day. Pointless work will wear me out in a hurry, but meaningful work, the kind of burden that we're talking about here, yes, it costs, but ultimately, it's where I find rest. It's where I recharge. It's where I find meaning in this world. Christ offers us meaning in our burdens. Not a heaviness for heaviness' sake, not work for movement's sake, but purpose, meaning, mission, weight for a reason. Weight that gives us rest. So come to Jesus, all you who are weary and heavily burdened. Come everyone who has tried to master this world and the wisdom of this world and are spent and done. Come to Jesus, all those whose work feels fruitless and meaningless and find purpose and the kind of weight you want to bear. Come those who aren't good enough, smart enough, or powerful enough according to this world. Come children of God. Christ's yoke is easy, it's humble, it's gentle, it's for the children. It looks and acts like Christ always, and in the end, the burden is light because it matters. It gives purpose. It produces beauty in this world. May we be a people who lean into this humble, vulnerable wisdom in the world. May we trust that the Christ's path to God is the path to God, not as a way of excluding others, but as remembering the nature of what it is we're talking about and not ever sacrificing that. May we take on the easy yoke and the light burden of Christ. Let's pray.